Welcome to Teaching Restored. We get to talk about all the great things there are about teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ and what we can do to become better. And I've got a little story for you, Julie. I'm going to do a little bit of a, not a throwback, but a follow-up. Are you ready for this follow-up?
I like the idea of a throwback because it made me think of something like vintage.
Well, yeah, this is a vintage. This is just a follow-up from an episode that we did on the five questions. Do you remember the five questions?
Oh,
do you remember that episode? Okay. So
That was a while back though.
A while back. My wife listens to our episodes. I don't listen to us because I've listened to us once already, but every now and then I will. Every now and then. Well, on the way back from a week at the beach, it was me, Kelly, and our two boys who are still at home. She goes, "Oh, I haven't listened to this. We're just going to listen to it." I'm like, "Oh, do we really
need to listen to me?" You have to listen to your own voice.
Right. So she puts it on and plays it. And as she was playing it, the question would come up. Good. She'd stop it and say, "Boys." And then she'd ask the boys the questions.
Oh
is right. how do you know that your dad loves you?
Oh, this is the questions. Oh, I thought you meant the types of questions, but you're talking about
questions
that you ask to gauge whether or not you've been successful in a lesson.
Yes.
Like that we're supposed to ask ourselves.
We're supposed to ask ourselves for self-evaluation. Yeah. So Kelly started asking the boys this. How do you know your boy? How do you know your dad loves you? One of them said, "He makes money." Wow. He provides, provides for us. I mean, it was something along those lines, right? And I'm like, awesome.
Yeah, okay. But that's funny.
Really? How do you know that your mother loves the Savior? And they were kind of generic answers. We weren't expecting really deep answers, I don't think, because they were off the cuff. We didn't give them time to think about it. But that's one thing I learned, is that those kind of answers, they take some time to think.
Yeah,
You can't just throw them out and, get a serious answer and got to kind of work up to that. So, I don't know. I feel like a failure right now. So not really, but it wasn't that bad. It was like, maybe I need to do a little bit better in some of my areas. I don't know, but it was good for me to go, we get on an episode and we say, go do this. And because we've already worked through it in a way, right?
Yeah.
But have you and I really done all of these? We need to make sure that we do that too. So I'm coming over to your house and I'm going to ask your children these questions.
Great. I'm so excited for this.
Yeah.
So no, this is a terrible idea. You are forbidden. You're locked out.
I am disinvited.
Yep. Nope. Not going to happen.
Nope.
That is kind of a little bit of a vulnerable conversation though, because the questions, remember, the questions are reflective, right? And you're like, I don't know that I would actually ask these out loud of a class, but you're reflecting on what you think they might answer. So to ask them of your kids,
Yeah, it was an experience. But I kind of chalked it up to we're not going to get into it. We didn't push back. It was your dad provides for you. That's how you know he loves him. Seriously. Okay. Yeah. Think about it a lot, right? We just went, okay. All right. Just took that and went on. But I think if we dove in a little bit deeper, I think things would have been a little bit better, but it's still, a good lesson for me. Anyways. Okay, let's dive into this topic. If you would please open up scriptures to Alma.
Ready.
Alma 13.
Okay.
Alma 13. Alma 13 is the high priest chapter where he talks to the people about the role, well, who what a high priest does and how dedicated they are, and that everyone has the opportunity to become a high priest. It just depends on whether, you know, they want to take advantage of that or not. It's not like, and in a way he's saying, we're not special. We're just, we've decided to dedicate our lives to the Lord. And then he talks a bit about the fruits of dedicating your life to the Lord. And then he talks about Melchizedek. And then he talks about 21, verse 21-ish. He starts talking about the gospel being preached to men on the earth and how important that is. So Julie, will you basically read the first three lines of the first sentence of verse 23? And as you do, I want you to be thinking about what this means to you. And then, so go ahead and read it and then give me some commentary on what you just read.
Okay. And they are made known unto us in plain terms, that we may understand that we cannot err.
Those now they,
first three lines.
Yeah, yeah. Now they are made known unto us. They being basically the gospel. The gospel. And the gospel is made known unto us in plain terms. Right.
The tidings that the angels are declaring from their mouths unto all the nations.
There we go. Thank you.
Right?
Okay. That is correct.
Okay. So
your thoughts.
The idea, you want commentary. So the idea is that the gospel, the plain and precious parts of the gospel, I would even say maybe, right, are made known unto us simply, like in terms that we can understand. And it's meant to be plain, it's meant to be straightforward so that we don't mess up our understanding, like that it's clear to us.
Okay. What's plain and clear?
So when to me, like I'm looking at the cross references for the word plain. Mm-hmm. And I think in part, doesn't it have to do with like not, okay. There's a scripture and I don't know, this is one of the cross references, but in a language that you understand. So it's in a way that you could understand it. That's not one of the cross references though. No, it does talk about in Ether, the verse, the cross reference in the verse of Ether, you know, as you know, that it's in your language, right? That's what it says in my language, my own language. And I love the verse in Jacob where it's talking about the plain things are like things as they really are. So truth broken down in its purest form, maybe might be part of that. I love this idea about, you know, it, in the second Nephi 32:7, it says, you know, when it is given unto them in plainness, it has this even as plain as word can be. Mm-hmm. I think of it as just being super stripped down and as clear as it can possibly be. No extra words necessary. Simplicity on the far side of complexity. Like you can't not get it is what I heard in that verse when it says that we may understand that we cannot err.
Okay. And yet people do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but look at the next part of the verse, right? It's talking about, and this, because like, it's going to be so basic because you are wanderers in a strange land. Like, and therefore, like it's going on and saying you are highly favored. Like we have these glad tidings. Like it is so important. And you are in hard circumstances, right? Mm-hmm. And it is so important that we're going to feed it to you as clearly as we possibly can. And then I guess it's up to us to not mess up. So maybe we cannot err in our understanding, but we might use our agency to still err in performance and behavior.
Good, good, good. Thank you. I appreciate that. So there are two things that you are actually intermingling that I don't know that you knew that you were doing it. And so I want to delineate between these two things.
I have no idea what I was doing. So
it's okay.
I do not know.
You were commenting exactly what I asked you to do. Well done. Okay. So tell me, you have been talking with those of other faiths, pastors of other faiths, etc. How plain are those conversations?
They are so, it is like mud.
it's a bit complicated, so isn't hard. It?
But in part, because it's not always, we're not always speaking the same language. We're not always defining terms the same way. It isn't simple. Like, there are phrases that in and of themselves are pregnant with meaning to that person that sound like gibberish a little bit mm-hmm. to me because mm-hmm. I don't understand the words. They're not familiar.
Right. So interesting. So are you saying that there are concepts that are a bit more complicated?
I don't even know if they're a bit more complicated, but the way that they're described to me feels complicated because in part it's unfamiliar. And in part, I think how do I say this without in any, there's no ounce of me that feels critical or wants to, you know, say something negative. But from my perspective, there are some concepts that aren't necessarily even clear to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so gotcha. The way that it's being described has meaning to them, but they're not necessarily able to break it down. And when I look at that verse, I'm seeing it talking about it being stripped down. And that was hard in some of those conversations with those of other faiths to strip down and to make plain a truth that they understood as this picture, but couldn't necessarily, or maybe just I couldn't understand. It could be my ignorance. Good. I couldn't grasp what it was that they were trying to say.
Okay. So what you have talked about here, these two things that I'm referring to that you've talked about is plainness and I'll say simpleness, just for lack of a better word, simpleness of the doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
But you also talked about the plainness or simpleness of the mode of communication as well.
Totally. Okay. Totally.
Both
totally.
Of those. If we look at this and go a little bit deeper into this, this verse is not talking about the first instance of plainness. It's talking about the mode of communication, plainness.
Okay, so not the plainness of the doctrine, but it's talking about plain terms.
It could be plain terms, but it's just the way it is delivered is plain. Okay, hold on to that thought. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to another. Okay. Let's go to another verse, and that verse is in 2 Nephi.
It says plain terms. It says plain terms.
It does. It does say plain terms. But let's go to 2 Nephi 32.
Okay.
Verse 7. Will you please read this?
Love to. And now I, Nephi, cannot say more. The Spirit stoppeth mine utterance. And I am left to mourn because of the unbelief and the wickedness and the ignorance and the stiff-neckedness of men. For they will not search knowledge nor understand great knowledge when it is given unto them in plainness, even as plain as word can be. Oh. Huh. Okay. You're muted, Kevin. What happened?
Okay, now you can hear me. Let's look at one more. 2 Nephi 25:7.
Okay. I'm just still processing this one, just, you know, 25.
Yep.
Okay.
This will help you process.
Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
I'm there.
Please.
Okay. But behold, I proceed with mine own prophecy according to my plainness. Oh, interesting. In the which I know that no man can err. Nevertheless, in the days that the prophecies of Isaiah shall be fulfilled, men shall know of surety at the times when they shall come to pass. So I think you want that first part, right?
Correct.
I proceed with my own prophecy according to my plainness, in the which I know that no man can err.
Interesting though, isn't it? Because exactly what kind of plainness is he talking about? So there's the plainness of the gospel, but if we go and talk to someone of another religion, the gospel is not plain and easy to understand so that no man can err. If we read the Bible,
but it is maybe to them, right?
Well, it might be, and it might be to us as well. But when we talk to others and try to preach the gospel, it is not, it's a bit messy. In fact, it's kind of complicated. When we talk about the Trinity, for example.
Yeah.
Trinity of, I mean, talk about a complicated subject, trying to speak Trinity versus the Godhead with someone and then show it in scriptures. And that is there. Yeah. I don't know that we could use the word plain in any of that kind of conversation.
No. But look at there is an operative word here, I think. And
which verse?
Like in verse 7 of 2 Nephi 25, he's saying my plainness. And I think, doesn't that kind of have to do what's clear with the idea of what's clear in my mind and what I understand?
Sure. Does that could be. Yeah.
And so when you're talking about how when you take your plainness and somebody else's plainness and try and match them up, that's kind of what you're describing. You're saying not so plain and simple.
Right. Well, I think that's one interpretation of it. Let me give you a different interpretation of that.
Okay.
And it's focusing on the plainness of the mode of communication.
Okay.
So if we go back to Alma, Alma 13. Okay.
Got it.
Verse 23 here.
They are
made known unto us in plain terms that we can understand that we cannot err. I'll tell you where. So I was reading through this, studying this part of the Book of Mormon, and something happened that we all had an experience that made me perk up on this verse and go, wait, what does this really mean? And what, in what context, and how is this applied? And what are we really talking about here? And what had happened is that, there was someone at the high school, at our high school, local high school that our boys go to. This person is a Christian, an evangelical, Protestant, I don't know, Christian. And they wanted to have a I Love Jesus event kind of thing. And so they invited the whole school. They did it on the football field, and they had everyone come out, and they played music and had people talk and this big thing. And a number of our kids went. One of my boys went, and we asked them about it and how it went. And then we asked, did you see any others from our church who went as well? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, they went as well. And some of them were just tears mm-hmm. from the experience that they had. And some of them, one said, I haven't felt the Spirit that strong in a long time.
Like one of the kids from our church?
Yeah. And I was like, is that reflective on our activities? Is that reflective on our organization of award? Is that reflective on a family? Is that reflective on, okay. If they haven't felt the Spirit in a long time like that, then what are we missing, right? So some people could turn to, hey, we need to start doing stuff like that. We need to do these big things. And, we even started talking about how this, a smaller group, kind of a subset of this group would do a thing. And they do these kind of like a combined activity, but bigger. And it's just incredible. Each month they do these things, and then they have the spiritual thought, and it gets deep and feel the Spirit and all that, and which I do not doubt. Okay. I'm not saying that the Spirit wasn't there. I'm not saying all of that. But then I started to think, wait. Could it be that we are misunderstanding what the Spirit feels like, or that we are saying that something that we feel is the Spirit when it's really not? And okay. Could it be that it's emotion that we might be mistaking for the Spirit? Mm-hmm. So I went down that thought for a while. And then in conjunction, I read this and I thought, our sacrament meetings are about the most boring, plain hour of the week. And if you compare it to any church, it is just... I mean, how many people have come to our sacrament meetings and sat there and was like, there's no band, there's no
right
preacher, it's going thumping.
Not entertaining.
Right, there's no entertainment at all.
Yeah.
And then I thought, plainness. Hmm. Huh. Oh my goodness. And if you think about it, we don't... On purpose, we don't have all these instruments up there. We use the organ,
right?
We use the organ for the hymns. We don't even use the piano for the hymns unless we only have a piano in some areas. But if we have an organ, we use the organ specifically. We don't do flashcards at the pulpit, right? We don't have, what am I thinking? Teaching aids or whatever that we hold up and say, okay, we're giving a talk. It is pretty plain. During the sacrament, there is no music. It's silent-ish minus children, right?
Yeah.
And wow, that's pretty plain.
When now, you were talking about this, I thought you were talking about like the words, but you're talking about the actual... what's the term?
The mode of communication is what I came up with. Yeah, the environment. Yes. Yeah. The way in which the environment in which the word is given. And as
it's plain.
It's plain. And I started to think about why. Now let me ask you. I've some thought about this some, but why are our sacrament meetings so plain?
So I've thought of it one way, but I think I'm connecting a dot that you connected. So let me connect that dot first and then I'll tell you my thought because it's kind of connected. Is that it's to help us feel the Spirit, not to be confused with feeling something emotional.
I think that is one thing. Yes.
Okay. I also have always thought it had to do with distraction. Like that we want to make sure it's focused on the most important thing. Like it's not about the fancy piano accompaniment. It's about the simplicity of the words of the hymn. And if you're paying too much attention, and I actually, as a pianist, mm-hmm. have different feelings about that.
Okay.
I think it adds to and enhances and invites the Spirit when there's a little bit more fun.
Understandable.
Sorry. But like I think about the visual aids and the things like that we can get so caught up in those things we do in our lessons.
Mm-hmm. Right? We do.
And we end up maybe missing the point and then other people cause other people to miss the point.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say distraction is maybe okay. Why.
That's good as well. I think both of those answers are correct. So there was one morning, it was beautiful. I was on a back deck reading the scriptures. It was Sunday morning. It was just gorgeous. And I came across this again and I'm like, oh, I got to really dive into this more. And I walked inside and my boys were there. And I said, tell me what EFY or FSY is like. Mm-hmm. I've never been to an FSY.
Right.
Or an EFY when I was young. I didn't even know that they existed. And so, but I've gotten reports from all of my kids. Now we're on number 7 and 8 who are reporting back on this is what FSY was like. And it was so great. Well, tell me what it's like. All right. Well, we get up in the morning and we have scripture study. Okay. Cool.
Woo!
Yeah, I know, right? Right? And there's time to play and time to things. And I said, okay, tell me about the classes. Someone gets up and gives a class, talks about a subject. Okay.
Okay.
So, all right. So, but there are times when you're all together, right? When do you really feel the spirit there? When we sing. Okay. So you're singing and you're, and one of my boys said, especially the medley, the young men, young women medley.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And they love that one. And that's just powerful for them. And I think that, okay, great. And then they have activities, you know, they go and do these activities. But when what I surmised, could be wrong in this, but what I surmised is that when the gospel is preached, it's a pretty plain environment. Mm-hmm. It's not over the top. It's not yelling. It's not music blaring. It's not made to create an emotional response. It is made to turn them toward the Spirit. So, like you said earlier, we can receive it in our own way. And the way we do that is from the Spirit speaking to us in our, quote, language, the way we need to hear it, right? Okay.
Versus through emotion or something else, right? Versus
right.
Through.
Right. Go ahead, please. I want to hear your thoughts so far.
Like, are you almost, I mean, I'm going to say insinuating, but that has like a negative connotation to it. But are you almost insinuating that sometimes emotion could actually block us from feeling the Spirit? Like it might distract us from actually tuning into the Spirit?
So
and is that?
I won't insinuate it. I will exactly say that.
Okay.
Yes.
But so now,
however, when you feel the Spirit, there's emotion. So it's not like it's emotionless.
Yeah.
What I see sometimes is that we purposefully and maybe unknowingly create emotion to try to mimic the Spirit.
Oh, you know my pet peeve.
Oh, what's that?
I've said it. I'm just so naughty to even
say it. Okay, you're going to say it. You're going to say it again.
Oh my gosh. When people use their voice and their emotion to try and manipulate yours.
Okay.
Okay, so don't pretend I didn't say that out loud because it sounds really critical and judgy, but it does bother me. So what I'm hearing you say to your point is that sometimes we might even use that as a crutch.
I don't know. I don't know if crutch is the right word, but I know where you're going with that. And I see that. Maybe as a crutch. I've seen it used when I really want these kids to feel the Spirit, or I really want them. And so I'm going to almost put on a performance so that they can feel like this, right?
Yeah. Like you're trying to. So this is actually kind of a funny story. So my husband has ADHD. He is very energetic and loves to bring people along with what he's feeling. And he told me about how he had this business partner where he felt like he had to be more animated and more excited because she was so flat. And so he's like, I just felt like I needed to like help her to feel what I was feeling. And so I would get bigger. And like, I was like, oh, and do we kind of do that in our classes? We're like, the energy is a little so I'm going to bring it and help everyone to feel. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Partly. Yeah, it is. I mean, because like that is a great explanation or a great example of a way that we do that, I think.
Yeah.
But what I have found is that when we simplify and the church is all about, I don't think that we intuitively recognize this overall, because I didn't intuitively recognize this. Maybe there are some people out there that have, but we have made things pretty plain. Yeah. We have not gussied them up. We have not entertained them, right? Created big entertainment things for people to feel the spirit. Now, there may be things where we're creating entertainment because that's the point of the activity. And we want people to just have a good time and get to know each other. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when we're preaching the gospel, when we are talking about the plan of salvation and Jesus Christ, we're typically not doing it in an entertaining way. We pretty much strip that out, and as plain as words can be, we just say it. It may not be pretty. Someone may get up and bear their testimony, and it may be kind of jumbled and like, what? But the thing is when we bring in the Spirit, then the Spirit doesn't have to fight against all these other things that we've created, right? And I feel like that's why it needs to be so plain, is because we don't want them to go to the emotion. We don't want them to go to the music in the entertainment way. We don't want to go to the guy or gal who's up there and just pounding the pulpit or over exaggerating things, right? It's pretty plain. Here's the information. Here is the gospel. Let the Spirit come teach you, because it will teach you more than all these other made up ways that I think that I'm going to get you to feel.
So I don't think I like this. So let me tell you why.
Okay.
Because I like to be entertained. So,
but we all do, right?
I know. I also like to be entertaining. But I'm going to tell you something that I think I'm observing. So as you're saying all of this, I'm reflecting on something, and I don't love what I'm learning through the reflection, but I'll share it.
Okay.
You know how sometimes you learn something and you're like, oh, darn it.
Yes.
I'm having one of those moments right now, kind of an darn it moment. So there have been times when I've sat in a sacrament meeting and I'm like, this is so boring, like snoozeville. And there have been times when I've sat in a Sunday school class and thought the same thing, like, yes, I am just bored. And I think that what you're describing, like this plainness of delivery, serves a really strong purpose. And part of it is that it causes us or forces us to get into a frame of mind that allows us to tune into the Spirit, instead of like a lazy frame of mind can be entertained, but it takes, yes, a thoughtful, introspective, kind of intentional frame of mind to be able to find, discover, and feel and benefit from the Spirit of plainness.
Let me change just one little bit of that. I think you are right on. You said, okay, I think the plainness causes us to da, 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 da. Let me change, yeah, that to, I think that opens up space to allow us to.
Well, and here's why. Then it sounds better when you say it that way.
Well, go back to 2 Nephi chapter 25, verse 7.
Okay.
25:7.
Oh, yes. Yes. Right. This is the one where they like,
oh, no,
their mind.
Sorry.
No, it's
32:7.
We're, yes, talking about their minds and the stiff-neckedness,
exactly,
of their hearts.
Exactly. So read that, yeah, again, if you would.
Okay, yeah. Now, Nephi, cannot say more. The Spirit stoppeth mine utterance, and I am left to mourn because of, and this is where we have to check ourselves, right?
Right.
Like, am I not getting it because of my own unbelief or my own, I would say wickedness, but I'm putting it in air quotes because we need to kind of, like, we may dismiss that word if we think we're not wicked, but, mm-hmm, like, we all have, because of my own struggles, mm-hmm, temptations, whatever it is. and the ignorance, my own ignorance and my own stiff-neckedness and my own unwillingness to really search the plainness, to discover knowledge and to find the spirit. And darn it, I'm not given to understand great knowledge, even though it's delivered in plainness, because I'm not in the right frame of mind and heart to actually receive it.
So the plainness doesn't cause us to learn. The plainness opens up a space to allow us to use our agency to search great knowledge if we want. Or we can sit back. Well, go ahead.
But it also leaves space for my unbelief and my
and my laziness and my wanting to be entertained
and my fatigue. My fatigue. Sometimes I just need somebody to just feed me.
Seymour. That's right.
Seymour. Feed me, Seymour. Yes, but it's true.
I know. Right? I know. Right. But and that in that time when we need to be fed like that, not when we are weak. This is a different time. When we are lazy and just want to be fed, we are being acted upon and not acting ourselves when we have the full capability to do so. And so that may be the wickedness that you read about in that verse, right? That the quote wickedness is us not willing to, you know what? Yeah, there are some great truths here, but I'm not gonna,
this is
really boring.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna apply myself. I mean, really. And really dive in and learn, as it says, great knowledge, even when it's given to us in plainness. Now, notice those two things together. The great knowledge is given to us in a plain environment, in a plain way of communicating, right? In that way, I think that is the only way Heavenly Father can get to us on a kind of consistent level of, I'm going to strip out everything that I can. So that when I give this to you, the only thing that can be there is the spirit to teach you. If we start adding other things in, it's going to get in the way. And so he wants it in plainness. Now, that gets back to your comment earlier of sometimes we want to be entertaining. You and I, especially, right? You and I, in a way, are entertainers. Yeah. Kind of almost at heart. We want to entertain. And is that the way to teach the gospel?
Like we might be misinterpreting our job.
Maybe. Our job description has nothing to do with entertainment in there. Now, if I'm in a primary class, okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
I was actually just going to push back just a little bit because I'm thinking about the youth and I'm thinking about the idea that like you can't just give them plainness and expect that they're going to be motivated.
Actually, let me push back on that.
I know what you're going to say. I know what you're going to say because I actually heard something this week. I was, and they said, why do we not give them more credit?
Right.
And but I do feel, okay, so let me, and you can say, push back on me in just a second.
Okay,
but
like, let me I want to hear your initial pushback.
Like, I'm thinking about, you know, my daughter, who's really struggled to be motivated to go to church, to be able to go to activities, because the social, she's so social, and sometimes it's just boring. And so in order for her to feel motivated to show up, she wants to anticipate something fun and a little bit exciting and a little bit, does that make sense?
Yes.
To just be motivated to go. And so I think about like the contrast between our young men and young women activities or nights or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And then the ones at this neighboring church that literally all the kids are going to, including the members of our church.
Yes.
Because it's more fun more fun. So is there a create an experience to get them there And then, I mean, but you can't then go wah, wah, strip it back, be plain, be boring, because then it didn't meet the expectation and then they're not showing up anyway. So okay. There's my little long-winded pushback.
Okay. Let me give you a pushback squared on that.
Pushback. Okay. Got it.
And I'm not saying I have this all worked out by any means, but because you and I feel like Addie does, where she may want to go to church and she feels, hey, I want to be a little bit social and yeah. I want to have something that I can look forward to, right? We feel as adults, we feel that way.
We fight that same instinct.
We yeah. do.
I mean, and I can say to her, that's not why we go. Da, 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 da. Right? But it's
because our expectation, and you use this as well in your explanation and your initial pushback, the expectation is that we will go to church and get these things. Well, what if we stopped expecting that?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I can tell you that I've had conversations with her about how can we shift
Good.
Our yeah. goal? How can mm-hmm. we shift our expectation? And it made her cry because it sounded exhausting.
Exhausting. Mm-hmm. How's that? I didn't expect like, you to use that word.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, she wants to go and have it be social and easy. And when I'm like, you know, Addie, part of why you go is to do what the Savior would do and find the people that are struggling and also have a hard time showing up. And maybe you could shift your goal from people feeding you and people coming to you and people wanting you to you being the person that does that for other people. And she's like, oh my gosh.
Okay. I get that. Yeah.
Okay.
What if we set, change the expectation to something else even? Not even, I want to be, you know, just for lack of explaining it more, just, you know, to be entertained, not that,
yeah.
and not the social, and not to even help anyone else. What if you're okay. there because you want to learn from the Spirit? You want to pick up something and say, okay, Spirit, tell me, I want to learn something. Give it to me, right? Help me pick out some big nugget that I can take away from today's sacrament meeting or whatever. And this is really boring. So I'm looking for it. I'm looking. And then, but we go into it with that expectation where, as Nephi says, that we are searching for knowledge, for great yeah. knowledge, right? Maybe that is our expectation, is that we search for the knowledge rather than being spoon-fed the knowledge.
Well, and that appeals to me because I'm a seeker, right? That appeals right. to me. Like, I think that when I go to the temple, I'm like, Heavenly Father, whatever you want me to learn, I'm trying to get myself into the space with my heart open. I just do everything I can to say, I'm ready, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But how do you help a teenager get to that point? Like, that's not, they don't have that same right. intrinsic motivation that you and I do, because we've seen the fruits of that
right.
in our own lives.
Right.
They don't have enough life experience.
Okay. So then that, okay, I'm doing this off the cuff. I'm answering this question.
I know.
Off
sorry. The cuff. I may be derailing what you were trying
You're
to
not.
Teach just a little bit.
You're okay. not. Because this is where it all leads to. It leads to these kinds of questions. We've got to be able to
right.
at least somewhat answer these questions, because when we go down this rabbit hole, we realize, oh my goodness, maybe there's some truth to this. And then, well, what is the alternative then, right?
Right. Well, so, and we have to make it real. Like, it has right. to be real. And if
yes.
we're just going to talk about it in fluffy terms and assume it's going to land, people are going to, like, you just, that's not how the world is. Like, it's got to right. be real.
So here's a thought that I've had lately. Maybe we're doing things wrong. And and by Sorry. That, maybe. What my thought is, okay, to the young man or young woman who says, I haven't felt the Spirit like that in a long time.
Yeah.
Have I as a parent helped that child really recognize what the Spirit feels like? Or have I left that up to the church? Have I created experiences for them to help them recognize the Spirit And then even maybe we didn't notice before, but maybe even point out, is this spirit or emotion? Mm-hmm. And how to tell the difference between the two. Mm-hmm. Have I done that? And maybe those are some of the things that I need to change. And as I've been thinking about this, I'm realizing, you know what? I haven't really taught my kids directly the difference between the spirit and emotion. Maybe I need to be upfront about that. And maybe I need to create more experiences where they will feel the spirit and then help them recognize them, and then help them recognize, okay, now that you're feeling the spirit, what does that mean? It's not just, oh, I felt the spirit. It's, what does that mean now to you?
You know, it's interesting because even as you're saying this, I think that we take a lot of things for granted when it comes to our kids, especially if we have raised them as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There are things that we know, that we have made sense of over the course of our lifetime, that we just take for granted is like almost like they're learning it by osmosis. And we don't ever say it with our mouths and say it out loud. Like, I can tell you the other day, I was having a conversation with Liam and Addie, and it was just an impassing, which are sometimes the very best teaching moments, right?
Yes.
And one of them made a comment, because there was an event that they had gone to where I expected it to be a spiritual experience. And they were like, kind of. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, did you feel the spirit? And they were like, I don't even really know if I felt the spirit. I don't even know really what that means. And I was like, what?
Are you my child?
You know what I mean? What? And so what we did, and I didn't panic in that moment, just, you know, like I didn't hyperventilate. I know. Thank you. But we started going back and saying, well, what do you think? Like, let's talk about some memories that you have that you think you might have been feeling the spirit. And my son, in a conversation a little bit later, I remember him saying, I think I have felt the spirit like 4 times. And I was like, oh. And he reflected on those experiences. And I think that as he was reflecting on and talking about those experiences, he was able to define, you know, kind of expand the definition just a little bit. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that I think we take for granted certain things. And then when we go to say them out loud with our mouths, or ask our kids to say them out loud with their words, that we sometimes have an opportunity there that is pretty revelatory. Like it can reveal quite a bit about what they do and don't understand. It was very interesting to me.
Yes.
I don't know if I explained that very well, but
I think we've all had, as parents, I think we've all had those times when, hey, did you feel the spirit? Not really. And someone, and I know I've had this with my kids. I think I've felt the spirit this many times. Really? Well, let's talk about that. Yeah. And then they start realizing, oh, actually, I felt it here. Actually, that's true here. And that's right. I did receive an answer here. And it goes on and on and on and on. Right. Yeah. But we may not recognize those things.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Mm. Yeah, it is.
But talking about it sometimes helps us to recognize it.
Yes.
So like actually having conversations is what I hear you encouraging.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And then, again, creating specific experiences to help them feel the spirit. Again, the church, I think we rely too much on the church. I think we really do as parents.
I do right? For sure.
I know I do. Okay. They're go to church and we're disappointed if they didn't feel the spirit in their class. No.
Bad.
Okay. So then, okay. Really, parent. And I'm talking to me, okay? I'm talking to as if I'm third personing me right now. All right, third parents. Person. So you are disappointed that they didn't feel the spirit in that two hour time frame. Really? Tell me the last week, when did you help them feel the spirit?
In your 70,000 hour time frame.
Oh. Good point. Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe we should have done more. Now, if we're doing Come Follow Me and some other things, hopefully those times come up and those are actually happening.
Yeah. You know what though? We gotta be a little bit careful here in how we're talking about this, because I don't want any parents to feel like crap.
No. Nope.
That's not the point.
Feel
encouraged, feel inspired, like feel so, like I'm right. trying to do this. Like
one of the reasons. One of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is because as a teacher, which means as a parent, which means as a Sunday school, youth, adult, teacher, seminary, yeah. Whatever it is, we don't have to be entertaining. In fact, if we are, we might be getting in the way of the spirit. Yeah. We look at some people and we think, oh, they're such great teachers. They're a dynamic. You don't have to be. You don't have to be that. I'm going to read this quote. If you've ever taught seminary or institute, you know this quote from President J. Reuben Clark, who was in the first presidency years ago. He said, "The youth of this church are hungry for things of the Spirit. They are eager to learn the gospel and they want it straight, undiluted. You do not have to sneak up behind them and whisper religion in their ears." In other words, you don't have to do all this stuff to get their attention and say, oh, here's a little bit of truth there. There you go. There you got something. Good job. Yep. Oh, I got it in. Good. You can come right out face to face and talk with them. You do not need to disguise religious truths with a cloak of worldly things. Let me say that part again. You do not need to disguise religious truth with a cloak of worldly things. You can bring these truths to them openly.
You want to know what I did the other day?
What?
I was talking to my son who's about to go to college about some spiritual things and habits, specifically spiritual habits. And I was trying to help motivate him to develop some spiritual habits. And so I started listening. You're going to think I'm so dumb. Why do I do this to myself? Okay. So I started to the listening world. Like, I mean, here we go. The reasons. Like, and I was trying to come up with very logical, rational reasons why he should be motivated to develop these spiritual habits. And he finally looked at me and he's like, Mom, like, why can't it just be so that I can feel closer to Heavenly Father? I'm like, oh.
That's great.
Because I really was like trying to be like, Liam, and you'll have this benefit and this blessing and this, and this. And he's like, well, like, Emma, oh, you might actually be intrinsically motivated because you want. I was just like, you're a dork. We all make mistakes. We all make mistakes.
Right.
But my kid called me on it. I don't have to sneak it in.
That's pretty funny.
Like, Mom, like, really?
Good
like,
job, Liam.
Be straight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Be straight up. Those of us, and me included, who try to make it more than it actually is to elicit a response. And I fall in that trap. You fall in that trap. It's easy. It's so easy to do. And yet, we can't. Kelly, I don't know if you know, I don't know if we've told you this, Julie, but someone has been recently called to teach seminary, as in my wife.
Be awesome. She's gonna be
so I am so excited for her to teach, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking about, okay, now she's going to be teaching seminary and, you know, what is that going to look like? And I thought about the times that I taught seminary. I taught seminary when I was going to college for 3+ years. And where was my entertainment factor? I tried to gussy things up to keep their attention, especially at 6 o'clock in the morning. Understandable even then, right?
Totally.
Right. However, there have been so many times when I have sat at the feet of great teachers and they grab the Book of Mormon, they open it up and they thumb through it and they say, okay, now let's take a look, go in here, and we're in there and we're like, oh, wow. There was no entertainment there. They're in the words of the scriptures and asking good questions and we are in it and wow, it's been powerful. When I think of teaching with plainness, those are the kind of things that I'm thinking of specifically. Yeah. Getting out of the way to let the spirit do what it needs to do rather than trying to take the role away from the spirit and make it
more than it is.
More than it is.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. or trying to spice it up a little bit or jazz it up or whatever right. it is, right?
Right.
Which is a legit temptation.
It is. It is. And some, and again, going back to some teachers do not have that innate ability to do or right. desire to do. Fine. Great. Don't. Please don't.
Yeah.
That you don't need to have that. No. I think no. of how many seminary teachers are going to start teaching seminary very, very soon. Yeah. And some of them may think, oh, I've got to make this exciting. Actually, no, but yes, but no, but yes, but no. Right. There's a line there.
Wow, that's so clear. That is so crystal clear.
I just taught that in plainness. There we go.
Yeah. Wow. And you use plain words too. Good job.
Yes and no.
And yes and no.
And yes and no.
Good. Very good.
So there's my thought. Any last kind of a wrap up on this thought here, Jirly?
So my biggest takeaway isn't even as a teacher, it's as a learner. Mm. Like that I really am kind of struck by the fact, like kind of the reason behind it that you described at the beginning and then like maybe even towards the middle, where it is in part to give us an opportunity to get our hearts in the right place as learners. And taking advantage of that plainness in a way is part of what I'm walking away from. And so if I'm applying that to me as a teacher, why would I rob others of that same opportunity? You know, like right. if that's really an opportunity, if I genuinely see it that way, I don't want to get in the way and rob others of that.
I love that. Thank you. Great wrap up. I love that. Thank you for listening, everyone. We hope you learned something from this. We'd love your feedback. Go to teachingrestore.com and give us your feedback on, okay, this helped, or I've tried this and it worked, or it didn't work, and how can I make this better, or whatever it is. We love your feedback. And now that we have a team behind us, go check out the socials, Facebook, Instagram, etc. And we've got stuff going, little snippets all over the place. So
it's going to be awesome.
Enjoy it. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next time.